not to fear it anymore. And that's exactly what Ebenezer says in 11, when King Solomon says, because of the matter that the punishment doesn't come quickly, therefore the hearts of people are filled to do evil. And we said, filled to do evil means that, why is it full? Because that's really where the tendency is. They're not really searching for a life of wisdom. They're searching for satisfaction of their instincts. And as soon as they can find some justification, this guy did something wrong and nothing happened to him, so that's all the justification they need. Okay. We said that's the mode of the skeptic, too. There could be a preponderance of evidence against him, but if he's got one question that somebody can't answer him, that's all the justification he needs. Okay. And he said in 12 that there could be a single sinner who can do evil many, many times, and nothing happens to him. Okay, so he says, this also I know will happen, is that the those who fear God will have good, too. Even though you may see that on the one hand, that the sinner can sin many times and he's given a long life. And the previous verses where it talks about that the person will have verse 10, where he says he's seen wicked people that have nice burials and they have children that fill their spaces and carry on their legacy. And that seems to be a problem in terms of a person's sense of justice, because then he also sees an additional problem, that the righteous people that don't have children and people forget who they are, you think just the opposite. So we talked about that at length. So he's continuing in terms of the different questions and notions that people carry and whether they're good questions or not. And but you see, he did conclude when we finished off last week on 13, that he said the outcome is that although you may have instances where certain wicked people have long lives and things go smoothly for them, you do have cases where you have the wicked people that don't have long lives, and they just exist very briefly, like a shadow, like a fleeting shadow. And they do not fear God. Okay, so now it continues with the theme. As Ebenezer says, this is all talking in one theme now. So we'll do the next pasuk. The next verse is new. And this is how it reads. So he says, there is a futility that is performed on earth, that there are righteous people, that what they meet with in life is like the events or the actions of the wicked. I mean, they seem to be having evil happening to them. And then there are, in contrast, there are wicked people, that what reaches them is like the acts that should reach righteous people. So the good people are getting the evil occurrences, and the wicked people are having good occurrences. And he concludes that verse, and he says, I said that this also is futility. Now, there's a number of interpretations of this. So, and again, you know, we have to understand what it presents on the surface. And according to Rashi and Ibn Ezra, it's pretty much, you know, straight, without any interpretation. Rashi says that there are righteous people that reaches them evil, like the events that should happen, I guess, to the wicked people. And then there are wicked people that which reaches them as great lives, like the actions of the righteous people that entitle them to good. And I said this also is one of the futilities that occur in the world that are nogi. I mean, nogi means to say that they happen on a regular basis. Doesn't mean a majority, but nogi means that it is something which repeats in the world. And our rabbis explained this in one way in the tractate of Horios, but it doesn't make sense to me, Rashi says. Okay, that's Rashi, Ibn Ezra. So he says, for the beginning of this verse, until the verse that starts, this also I've seen, I've also seen wisdom, excuse me. So until that verse, which are 16 verses, it's all one matter, and they're all joined with the previous matter, that there are righteous people, that the curse to them was fitting for the wicked people. And also the inverse is also something which he sees, that the wicked people are experiencing what should really be meeting up with the righteous people. And when I saw this, I said, all is futile, whether one is righteous or wicked. Okay. So Rashi and Ibn Ezra seem to be taking it on face value. But we have to keep in mind one thing when we go through this, because people have this question all the time. This is one of the biggest questions. So we have the concept of God's justice. And we see from numerous cases of the flood and individual punishments, and God tried to coerce Cain not to kill his brother, and he gave him a punishment anyway, and then he even made the punishment more lenient. He did the same thing with Adam, when he said that you're going to eat the grass of the field. And the Talmud says that there was a problem, because it says in one place God says to Adam, as a punishment you're going to eat the grass of the field because of the sin. Another place it says that by the sweat of your brow you're going to eat bread. So which was it? So we see clearly that it's the latter, because we eat bread. We're not eating grass. But Adam was a little bit, he was overcome by, he said, I am a donkey, you're going to eat from the same, a trough. We're going to eat from the same bag of grass. So he couldn't take it. It was too much of a blow, which would have been good for him, but God again stepped in, and his mercy allowed him to alter that. So you see throughout time, and you see even in an application to death, in Genesis 5:24, I believe is where it says that, I think it was Chanoch, God says that he didn't exist anymore. It doesn't say he died. So let me just read it to you. And Rashi comments on this and says, let's talk about the generations. Right. And all the days of Chanoch were 365, whereas everybody else was living to about 900 or so back then. So why is so severe, such a disparity of years between Chanoch and everybody else? It says in 5:24 in Genesis, and Chanoch followed God, and God, but then he wasn't, for God took him. So Rashi says that he took it before his time. So you see that a person, that even in a, application to death, it could be a reason why the justice doesn't just apply to punishment on earth. So it can apply to a person's untimely demise, too. Now, what we have to also appreciate is not just Ibn Ezra and Rashi, but now let's take a look at what Sforno and what another commentary here say as to how do we understand this verse, that there's righteous people that seem to meet up with the fate of the wicked, and wicked people that seem to enjoy the great lives of, that should really be enjoyed by the righteous. So Sforno says as follows, there is a futility that is performed on the earth, that there are righteous people that reaches them like the acts, the events of the fate of the wicked. And what is that? That they acquire a bad name amongst the people, like it occurs to a righteous person who is not intelligent. And you can have that. It's called a chassid shota. So a chassid means a person who is very pious. His actions are upright. But if he's foolish, all of his good intent, if it's not guided by wisdom, he's going to make decisions that aren't good, and he'll end up having a bad name for himself. And this is what Sforno says, what it means, that there are tzaddikim, and there are righteous people, that what occurs to them should really be occurring to the wicked people. A wicked person should have a bad name, not a person who's living the best that he can in terms of following the Torah. But Sforno is saying no. See, some reason Sforno is pushed not to interpret the verse like Rashi and Ibn Ezra, and that's what we'll have to try to address. And then he says, continually, he says, and then there are some wicked people that reaches them the lifestyles that should really be enjoyed by the righteous. And what is that? That wicked people who acquire a great name for themselves, they have fantastic reputations, as it occurs by a wicked person who is cunning. And he does things in order to gain honor for himself. So he says, this is a futility, but this is what Sforno is now saying is the futility is. Okay, so he says, and what is the conclusion? But the King Solomon says, but I said that this also is futility. What's the futility according to Sforno? The good name that's acquired amongst the people that are fools. It's foolish. It's futile because it has no worth. All right, that's Sforno, has no worth. Okay, so that's another interpretation. So now we have two interpretations. So far, so good. Am I clear so far in the two positions?
Yes, sounds good.
Okay. All right, so you have the literal interpretation, which seems to be like Rashi and Ibn Ezra. And then you have Sforno, who's saying, no, it's not. He seems to be saying that this is not a literal read. And it's really referring to a righteous person, but since he's foolish, he's a fool, he's called the Chassid Shote. Shote means he's stupid. So you can have a person who lives the best that he can in terms of keeping the mitzvahs and all, but he has no intelligence. So when it comes to making decisions in life, he's going to foul up, and he's going to hurt himself with his reputation. And the last interpretation is as follows. This is the Talumos Chachma. I'm not sure if this is Malbim or who. He says, what does it mean that there are certain righteous that people that they experience negativity that should really be experienced by the wicked person? He says, if one begins to start investigating, he'll see, V'amor, ki ma'fazeh sh'adam shalvada. So he, I guess he means that King Solomon started to investigate, to analyze the subject matter. And he talks about that one man can rule over another man, we mentioned that. And since we explained, okay, let's skip over to where he gets to this. He says that sometimes a person will, a person who's low life, he'll rule over a person who's very righteous. And then he says also, therefore, it occurs, or it's prepared, or it'll happen, that certain times, to the righteous people, they'll have the faith of the wicked people. What would that be? That they will come across sin, like the wicked people, as we see by the 10 tribes that sold Joseph, the 10 brothers that sold Joseph. And regarding Judah, and Tamar, where he didn't give her over to his sons like he promised. So that was also a sin. And David with Bathsheba. And then you have the opposite. There are wicked people that they enjoy what should come to the righteous. And what's that? For example, Cyrus, who built the temple. And Asaph, that gave honor to his father. And Nebuchadnezzar, that he ran because of the honor of God. And Bilam, who blessed the Israelites. Right? And this is difficult for the mind to grasp, but these things happen. So he says, why was it prepared that there should be a stumbling block for the righteous with a sin? And why didn't they wash their legs why didn't they wash their steps from stumbling? And then also, why was there given opportunity for merit for those who go against God's will? But you see one thing here. This is all talking about free will. So this commentary, when it says that there's evil that reaches the righteous, it's their own doing. Which we can explain very well. So what is the futility? To ask this question. That's how he ends off. He says, what is the futility according to this fourth view? The Hak Shoseh. To have this question. Meaning to say, since we now see clearly, why is it that the negativity happens to the righteous? Because they did it themselves. It was their own free will. But to the rest of the people. See, where's the futility if you just read the verse? Why is it futile?
Because why do good stuff if you have about the same probability of getting a lousy outcome as the guy that does the wicked stuff?
No, these people brought it on themselves, according to this view. The brothers who sold Joseph. So that sin, it was self-inflicted. And to ask the question that why should a stumbling block be placed in front of these righteous 10 tribes, he's saying this is not a good question. That's not a good question. That's why he says it's futile. To ask such a question, this is ridiculous. A person has free will. So even a righteous person can do something which is a sin. But on the whole, the predominant part of his life has been in the service of God. So he gave in at times of King David, Bathsheba. And the opposite, we have a wicked person like Asaph, but he was like, they say, nobody fulfilled the law of honoring parents like Asaph. He had a very strong need for his father's approval and his blessings. So these two views are taking it out of the question on God's justice. So to answer a question we've asked before, so why don't they just take the literal read? So evidently, they're not of the opinion that anything is outside of God's justice, which makes sense. You know, we talk about how God took away Chanoch. I think there was a view there it was easy to go back to sin. So God removed him while he was still righteous for his own benefit. So he died in 365, whereas other people will live until 930. Adam lived to 930 years. And this is all prior to the flood, before the decrease in years. Like Rabbi Shay explained, that was part of the correction of man's sin, was to remove his sense of immortality. And how you do that? You decrease his life from 1,000 years to 100 years or so. That was one of the measures that God took. Okay. So evidently, Sforno and this view, they want to show how there's justice. If something negative is happening, there's justice. And we even talk about how, you know, again, we see throughout the Chumash, just because, you know, in the Torah, we have just, you know, a few cases compared to all the lives of the billions of people that have ever, you know, stepped foot on earth. But that doesn't mean, because the cases aren't recorded, we don't know what's going on, that matters are not being handled with justice. I mean, even when a person dies, there's something called tzedakah din that the person says. The family members say they testify to God's justice in life and in death. If somebody could put on the mute button, we're getting your conversation here. Yes.
Doesn't it seem a little bit like that's just rationalizing away the question? I mean, if we say, well, what about the righteous person that gets the fate of the wicked, and the wicked person that gets the fate of the righteous? And then we say, well, that's all justice, and we can't know, but God knows.
Right, well, keep in mind, he says that there are cases, meaning this is not the rule. So let's just make sure we have the perspective here. You're right, and I want to take that up next now. Meaning, what is Ibn Ezra and Rashi saying? They're taking it literal, which is what you're saying, right?
Right.
So they're not sidestepping it, as you would say. They're not trying to rationalize. But no, they're not rationalizing. It's because Sforno and Talumas Chachma are both presenting the position that nothing is outside of God's ability to control justice. And King David says, and you read Psalms, and you read you take a look at a siddur that, you know, the Israelites read on the Sabbath morning. So you look at the prayers and see where it talks about how it says that many seven negative occurrences might happen to the righteous, but he's saved from everyone. So what is King David telling you? That the world will go on as it's accustomed. People will be jealous of the righteous. They'll be bothered by it because they realize he's doing the right thing. They'll try to attack him. The occurrences will occur. The negativity will start, but he will be saved. Right? David was saved from Saul how many times? And from that, and so many people, so many enemies. So what he was expressing is that a person is living properly, he's on the right level, so there is providence, and God will step in. So now we have to answer, what about the other cases? What about the literal read of this verse, where you see the righteous people, certain things to be happening that shouldn't be happening to them? Now, what's important to know, again, is that, first of all, this is not the rule. He says, yes, there are tzaddikim. He doesn't say that every tzaddik, every righteous person suffers. It's not true. You look at the lives of righteous people, and they're enjoying the wisdom and teaching and their students and their families. And again, since they're living in line with how the world operates, they anticipate the result of their actions in any area, agriculture, business, whatever they're involved in, they'll make the right decision most of the time. I mean, they can't know everything. They're not, prophets. Prophecy doesn't exist anymore. But for the most part, the person who's living intelligently is going to have a better life. You have to agree with that. Even if you just remove the whole discussion from Torah, the person studies the world and follows the laws of nature and makes sure that he has snow tires on when it's snowing. Doesn't try to use completely smooth tires in the snow. Of course, he'll have better traction. He'll get to where he's going, and so on, and all the other natural laws. So number one, this is summer time, but we still have to take the question. So how do we answer if we just point to Rashi and Ibn Ezra? And Rashi's honest. He says he doesn't like the answer that was given by the rabbis in that Talmudic source. He's being straight. He's saying, whatever. I didn't see the answer. I looked at this late this morning. I'll see. He doesn't really give a source here, but I'll see if I can locate it. But the fact is that, take a look at the next verse. The next verse, 15, says like this. King Solomon says, and I praised gladness. Happiness, that there's no other good for man under the sun, other than that he should eat and drink. And there's a medrash that says that always means, in Kehelis, eating and drinking means Torah study. But even we have to explain, so why does he say eating and drinking? But nonetheless, King Solomon's thought is that I've looked, and I really praise gladness, because there's no other good under the sun than a person should eat and drink and be glad, and this will accompany him in his labor, the days of his life, that is given to him by the judge under the sun. Use the word God as a judge here. So what is he bringing this in after this previous verse? So I think he's giving a interesting message, and I think that what did I praise gladness? He was just talking about a very high area about justice and how the righteous can suffer and the wicked are enjoying great lives. Now he's talking about eating and drinking. But what struck me, perhaps, is that he's saying that what is the futility in this first 14 when a person has this question, where he sees sometimes the righteous people suffering and the wicked people are in prosperity. So I believe the issue is that you're making an assessment without having all the facts in verse 14 about the evil that's happening to the righteous. And what King Solomon is trying to tell you, the only thing you can really do is praise what is real, what is not something based on assessment, but what actually is a real good. And what's that? Gladness, where a person eats and drinks, where he has a certain amount of enjoyment. And Sforno says in this, I praised gladness, that a person will be happy with his portion that he reaches, that is prepared for him, that he prepares for himself, that will provide for him, meaning his food, clothing, and shelter. And this will accompany him, that he may then further attain the completeness in terms of thought and action, meaning Torah. And he won't waste his time to acquire things that are not necessary, superfluous wealth, and so on and so forth. Okay, so why I'm suggesting why he's just juxtaposing these two verses, because according to the read of Rashi and Ibn Ezra, they're saying that this is really you do see this. This is not like Sforno and the other view that it's to be understood differently. But yes, there are there are some righteous that have this negativity. They have this. They have a bad life. So it could be that he's trying to show you that that is an assessment. You don't know all the factors. You don't know why this is happening. This definitely is justice. Because again, God knows everything. And like King David said, you have to keep in mind that you're a lot, but like King David said, seven negative things will occur to the righteous person, but he will be saved from them all. And you have this many times in Psalms. Now, King David was an honest person. And this is King Solomon, the son of King David. So nobody's trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. But a person has a problem where he tries to make an assessment. And we talked about this, the myopic view. He's just looking at a very small area of information, and he tries to conclude something. Like it's like you look at a hair follicle and try to figure out, let's say Martians came or aliens came to the planet Earth and human beings were gone. The only thing left was a single follicle of hair. So if they try to deduce, whatever, what a human was, what was the being that had this hair, they would make a lot of errors because they just don't have enough information. Similarly, if a person looks at the events that happen to the righteous or the wicked, and he says that this is a question on justice, but does he know everything that's going on? Does he know if God's taking away a person right now and cutting their life short, like Hanukkah, because it would be good for them to die as a righteous person and not as a wicked person? Do you know all the events that are going to unfold in this person's life? And maybe it's a better, it's good that the person goes through a certain amount of trouble in a certain area, however it's going to affect them. The fact that Jacob missed Joseph for those years, and Joseph's plan, and it seemed to be such a, why did he have such troubles? It ended up being something which perfected Jacob. And Jacob was imprisoned a little bit longer, Rashi says, because he trusted in himself. So there was a certain amount of, he was overconfident. He put too much stock in himself and not in God. He ended up staying in prison a few more years. And you have many accounts of this type. So what we really have to do is to be careful to analyze cases that we know are true. And when we have cases like this where we're not sure, and that's why I think he's saying the verse 15 next, if you really want to make an assessment, assess happiness or gladness. That's a real thing. If you want to make an assessment. That's why I believe he brings this verse next in order to show you this is what you can really do. And that's what he says, this is what I praise. When a person has happiness, when he's involved in something which is really a tangible good. So that's why I believe he says to eat and to drink. Because that's something which everybody registers in everybody. But really, of course, the highest good is involved in chachma, in wisdom. And that's why there's a medrash on this verse that says that when he says to eat and to drink, it really means the highest good. But we can explain why he uses the terms eating and drinking, because he has to relate to the majority of people who read this. So it has to carry that weight. So he juxtaposes these two verses in order to show you you're making a mistake. It's a futility if you come up with this question. According to Sforno, we have a sin because it's self-inflicted. A person is very pious, but he's a fool. He doesn't have intelligence. There are people like that they have good intention, but their minds are really weak. So they're going to make foolish decisions. And that will give them a bad name. And what occurs to this person who seems to be such a righteous, nice person, it seems to be it's a question on justice. But if you look into it, Sforno says, you'll find out why. Because it was self-inflicted. Not intentionally, but because there are certain people that are just weak-minded and they made poor decisions. And the truth is, don't think it's such a negative. To us, it's a negative because we want that good reputation. A person like that might be so meek that it doesn't bother him. That's also something you keep in mind. And then conversely, the wicked people that seem to have the greatest fame and they're applauded and the lauded, and why is this? Because you have wicked people that are very, very sharp, but they use their intelligence just to get more honor and wealth. People love that. People always want to be around somebody. They think they'll get some of the money. That unconscious, sometimes it's very conscious. why people who are rich have more friends than people who are poor. It's clear. Okay. So again, in answering Rashi and Ibn Ezra, to take this verse literally, so the futility, what is the futility that King Solomon says? My understanding would be that it's an assessment that you don't know what evils. Maybe this righteous person did some evils. You don't know about this righteous person, how what sins he did in his life, and maybe God's punishing him now here, and this way when he comes to the next world, he has no sins. He's been paid back here, and strict justice means that a person does anything wrong. Like as Sforno says in another place, that God doesn't take a bribe. So Rabbi Mann cited this to me years ago. He said, what does it mean that God doesn't take a bribe? He doesn't wipe away a sin just because you did a mitzvah in a different area. Okay, you did a mitzvah in another area, that's going to entitle you to certain perfection, certain reward. But it doesn't matter. If you didn't undo the wrong in a different area, just because you stole money from somebody years ago, and now you're the biggest, kindest person when it comes to charity to everybody else, but if you never gave back the money that you stole, you're still harboring a sin, and that's something which God has to punish you for. That is justice. So when you see a righteous person, you don't know what he's done in his past. So if the righteous person is suffering, and it's not for us to guess either. But he's saying it's futile when people do make this assessment, and they do try to come up with an answer. People are insecure. They can't tolerate not knowing something. They want to put a label on this. Or they want an out. Hey, look at the righteous people. You know, they're getting punished, and the wicked people, they're having fantastic lives. So what use is it for me to be righteous? Of course, that's just assessing this life. And you also don't know. If you read King Solomon's words, you see he said clearly, then you have wicked people who do have miserable lives, and they do get cut short. So there's a lot of unknowns.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So how do you explain the whole idea of bad things happen to good people? How can you explain it? It's not clear at all.
You can't.
Yes.
If you want, and no, according to Rashi and Ibn Ezra, let me qualify that. According to Sforno and Talmud Chachma, you see that they brought it upon themselves. So that's very clear that you can have people that are righteous, but they're foolish, so they made bad decisions in life, right? Or they were like the brothers, and they sinned. They actually went ahead and they sinned. So then, even though they're righteous for the most part, they're not free from sin. So either because of wrong decisions, you'll have bad events in life, or because you sin, or there could be others where we just don't have the explanation in every specific case. But keep in mind that King Solomon is saying, well, you have this in some cases. Now, what about all the righteous people who have good lives? And they're enjoying their wisdom, and they have their students and their families, and each day is like a new journey, and it's an enjoyable thing. I mean, you have plenty of people like that. So you have to really balance out the question. Don't say that this is the rule. If you had a case where any person who followed the Torah got hit by a car, then you'd have a question. You don't have that. That's not the case. Then that would be a real question on justice. You say everybody's doing the Torah now, they're all suffering. That's not the case. That's not the facts. And just because we don't have the answers in certain cases, that doesn't mean that God is oblivious. That makes no sense. God knows everything. Now, how could the Creator not be aware of what He created?
Thank you.
Rabbi?
Yes, Doug.
So, how do we know that 16 isn't tied to 15? And because it appears, well, I'm just wondering if whether 16 is referring to the person that praises joy.
Right.
And it seems to indicate that he never sleeps. So I'm wondering if he's putting down the pursuit of joy in 15, or in 16.
I didn't look at it yet. Let's take a look. When I gave my heart over to know wisdom and to see the matter that was performed on the earth, even day and night Sleep for one's eyes, he has not seen. He does not see. He doesn't have sleep. So who is he talking about there? And why is this called, he's saying, when I gave my heart over to know wisdom and to see the matter, to really grasp the matter that is performed on earth. So what is he talking about? It seems to be like a non sequitur, right?
Yeah, and in the second half of the verse refers to somebody who is not sleeping. So I was wondering if he's, when I applied my heart to know wisdom, then I saw that the person we were talking about in the previous verse is not really sleeping.
This is really big. When I placed my heart to know wisdom, it's in a matter that happens on earth. Kigam biyom uvalayla, shena ve'inov. Talking about himself? No, it doesn't sound like he's talking about himself. Right, so he says, according to Rashi, that it's the wicked person that's is immersed in the chase of money and sex. Well, illicit sex, adultery. That's what Rashi says. Sounds like to Ibn Ezra that he was pondering the question, that he's talking about himself, that he lost sleep over the question. I'll read you Ibn Ezra on 16. Kasher, so when I gave my heart over to understand, as I had see how he explains it. When I tried to ponder the matter to know why does the righteous people end up with the wicked lives, I did this until my sleep from my eyes, from day and night, was removed from me. So he's talking about himself. So he's saying this very question. He's going back about evil happening to the righteous and good happening to the wicked people. So according to Ibn Ezra, it's a smoother read. He says, when I gave my heart over to understand this matter, to see what happens on earth, even day and night, sleep from my eyes, I did not see. So instead of Be'enov, his eyes should be Be'enai, really should be. That's how Ibn Ezra explains it. He's saying the matter is a very big question.
So doesn't it seem odd, if that's the case, that he would switch pronouns in the middle of the verse?
Yes. I don't know why. Ibn Ezra says it really means him. He's talking about himself. Sleep from my... So that would have to be explained, what was the meaning over there. To take that up. I'm not ready for that now. Okay, but at least we have the few views over here. You see that, and again, if I'm correct, why the juxtaposition? That would be very clever. That he would first tell you that there's a futility. What's the futility? It's because the person is trying to guess at more than what he really has the facts to tell him. He doesn't know all the considerations why this individual, who seems righteous, is now having a bad few years. So to make an assessment on that, don't do that. You want to make an assessment? Go to verse 15. That's something this is something I can praise.
Right. Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi, is it possible, I remember asking a question about why do these bad things happen to good people. And the rabbi who I spoke to said that sometimes what God does is try to balance the account, the cheshbon, the account of his life. And if he did any sins, if he did anything along the way in his life, assuming that he's having a long life or whatever, that he's being punished here for those sins. And so he goes to Gan Eden, goes to the afterlife with a clean slate, and that he'll have only good, and he'll be with Hashem, and he'll be...
Yeah, that's what we just said. We just said that. That's a possibility. But again, we don't know in every case what's going on, though.
Right, but we don't know, because, I mean, you can see these tremendous righteous men in the Holocaust that passed away.
Yeah, that question always comes up, right.
Yeah, and there's no explanation, unless the one rabbi also said, well, it's because they were there at the time, and they didn't stop the people from assimilating. So everybody seems to have...
You don't know, that's guessing.
Sort of answer.
The Talmud does talk about why when certain punishments do come to the world that even certain righteous people get it, and that's what they said in that one case of the Talmud, because they didn't educate the people away from sinful lives. So even though they didn't sin themselves, but since they did, there was a responsibility. If they're the ones that had the knowledge and they didn't, you know, admonish the people. So that's
right,
definitely...
That's what I was alluding to, but I can't... It's hard for me to accept that, because some people were so righteous, and they really...
Well, again, we can't assess people.
We don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
It just doesn't make sense to you. That's what King Solomon is saying here. That's why it's futile. It's futile, according to the simple reading of the verse, because
right.
You just don't have all the facts. But what we should do, what should we do? We should be convinced. We know that God's righteous. We see all the cases in the Torah. So look at the cases that we do know where God did step in and do something. So you want to get a sense of justice, look at that, look at the prophets, what they write, and the cases that we have questions, so we have questions. But that question doesn't take away from what we know is true.
Mm-hmm. And for the same reason, that's why the good die young, before they get into a situation that would have been horrific for them.
It could be that, it could be that there's a punishment to the parents, Rashi says, the children of the 13... they really have no merit yet. They have no right. They haven't done anything in terms of fulfilling God's word at such a young age that they now have a claim to God. You only have a claim once of your own will you're following the right life. Now God dealing with you based on your merit, your demerit. But children could be taken away as a punishment to parents. I believe that's Rashi.
Uh-huh. Right.
And what God does with that soul, I'm sure it's 100% just. The child is not in a bad state.
Mm-hmm.
The parent is.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
And again, that's what we have, the Torah. Right? That's God imparted to us all this knowledge about his justice, to give us the rules and lay them down. In cases where we don't have the answers, that doesn't remove us from the facts that we've been taught, that he gave to us. He gave man intelligence. He gave man pleasant commands that every turn are beautiful and makes perfect sense. And the problem is that sometimes in life, people are looking for the out, or they just really feel that they should have the answer, and that cripples them from escaping this type of a question. It's an important thing, again, that you see how Sforno and the Talmud of Sfakma both did over here, where they did not say that it was undeserving. It was deserving. Either the people sinned, and that's why these righteous people had negative occurrences, or because they were righteous, but they were foolish, and they made errors that caused them their reputation and harm, had maybe long-lasting effects that nobody would do business with them, let's say, because they got a bad reputation. So they avoided saying that there's a problem. That makes sense, and so does Rashi and Ibn Ezra. Makes sense that even on the, because again the rabbis say you can't take a verse and explain it in a way that is other than its plain meaning its literal explanation. So that's why you have Rashi and Ibn Ezra approaching it from another angle and explaining that. this is something which you will see, but it doesn't mean that we have all the facts in order to make an assessment as to that this is unjust. And you see in his work, he goes on, King Solomon says that there's nothing better than the wise man. Because who's the one? We read it before. That he can interpret a matter. He understands how the world works. Right, that was right in the beginning. 8:1. Who is like a wise man who understands the interpretation of a matter? Meaning, we remember how we explained it. That since he's intelligent, he knows how to function in the world best. He'll make the best decisions. And because everything is done, is created with wisdom. So it's only the wise person that really can make use of the world the best. Not only that, the enjoyment of learning, it illuminates his face, we said. That's what the next part of the verse. And it removes his brazenness, his arrogance. The stubbornness that causes a man to think he's always right. That's removed when he sees all the wisdom in the world. The wise man doesn't have that. He's not trying to bolster himself at every point. He's passive. He realizes that there's a great mind out there that created the universe, and that gives him the ability to accept more, to accept responsibility, to accept mistakes, and to change his mind on things. He realizes he was wrong on certain assumptions, in order that he complies with how the world works even better. All right, let's see if he says. Yeah, even the next verse, 17, it talks about how it's a matter that I've seen all the work of God. Man is not able to find it out that is done under the sun. And even if a wise man says he'd become knowledgeable, he can't find it. So you see, right, he goes right into that point next about that inability. So you see how he's flowing right through, and he, in the subject matter of this whole area, he has to bring it to the fore that there's going to be areas that are outside of our ability. It has to be that way. I mean, we're created. We are not the creators. So we don't have the wisdom. Okay. All right, so let's wrap it up here. I got to find out what the schedule is. Next week is Purim Sunday. So let me see what time the Megillah reading, what time that is. We should be fine for 11:15. But, you know, if you don't hear from me, so same time, right? But if I do email you, so you'll know. But as of now, if you don't hear, so we'll meet again at the same time next week, all right?
Beautiful. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, Doug, did I answer your question, Doug? Doug?
Yes.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Rivka, you too?
Yeah, I think so. It's still, I have to tell you, it's still very hard for me to deal with the idea of somebody dying who you know personally is very, very good. But again, you don't know their whole life, and you don't know what Hashem has, and it has in store for them afterwards. It's just, we don't have, it's too profound to understand.
Well, keep in mind also that death is something which happens regardless of when it is. So
right.
It can't be a negative. And if it happens at a certain time, then God's deciding that that's the time that the person is going to go. And that's in God's hands.
And also, the afterlife is supposed to be so much better. So much better. There's no comparison. It's that's why they call it paradise.
Yep.
Paradise, Gan Eden. That's right.
That's right.
Because it's good.
Yep.
Okay,
exactly.
Rabbi, thank you. Bye, everybody.
All right, have a good week. Have a good week, everybody.
Everybody, good week. Yes. Bye-bye.
Be well.
Thank you.